Welcome to episode 44 of Conversation Street, the only podcast dedicated to the British soap institution, Coronation Street. I'm Michael.
And I'm Gemma.
And this week we'll be discussing the episodes broadcast in the UK between the 24th and the 31st of May 2013, which is a very long time.
Wow.
I know.
It's also nearly June.
It's nearly June. We got seven episodes to talk about today because we weren't here last weekend.
7 days.
Yeah. And that's also meant there's lots of Corrie history days to go over. For example, 45 years ago this week, Dennis Tanner married Jenny Sutton.
And became Dennis Sutton.
No, it doesn't work like that. Hope he is not married to her anymore, otherwise Rita's in for a shock. 30 years ago, Kirsty Soames was born.
Aww.
I thought we wouldn't mention her again. Happy birthday, Kirsty. How's it going in prison?
Oh, maybe you get a cake.
And also, even more importantly, it is 30 years since the famous date between Vincent Clare and Carol Monroe.
Is that like Vincent Gin?
No, that was Jack and Vera Duckworth.
I know.
That was a brilliant scene. I think that's
lots
of people's
famous. That was a famous, often repeated scene.
You're no widow, are you? No, but I will be with 10 minutes after I get you home.
That's a clip
from it there. 20 years ago, Liz MacDonald was offered a landlady job at the Queen's, and there was the first appearance of Tanya Pooley, who I've completely forgotten.
I love Tanya Pooley.
We don't know who Tanya Pooley is.
Maybe it's pronounced Tanya Pooley.
No, she's a chicken.
Maybe.
What else have we got? 5 years ago, since Joe McIntyre first appeared.
Aww.
And also Jerry Morton had a heart attack.
Was that related?
No, I think he was all right, though. And also, in the real world, not that Corrie isn't completely real, but in the
real, in the super real, out of the Matrix world,
it is 50 years this week, I think it was yesterday, that Sally Devener was born. Old Sally. Sally.
Don't say old Sally. She's 50.
Old Sal.
I don't think 50's old.
No, she doesn't look it.
50's like middle-aged these days, isn't it? You just hit your middle-age. Young, 49 is young.
Yeah, so we're super young.
I keep telling myself that.
It is also the 35th birthday this week of one of Corrie's finest actors. Happy birthday, Adam Rickett. Let's just have a moment of...
Happy birthday, Adam Rickett.
Your friends fancied Adam Rickett.
Who, did they?
I thought Rachel fancied Adam Rickett, or didn't you have a poster of Adam Rickett on your wall?
No. I met him outside the Mayflower, because he was in... a show I saw, and he was a right...
I can't say that on the podcast.
You can bleep it out.
Okay.
Bleep it out.
You can't say that on his birthday week anyway.
It was a right bleep.
Happy birthday, Adam.
Happy birthday, bleep.
We still prefer you to the current Nick. Well, I do anyway.
I'd rather Nick was dead. Move on.
Let's move on to street talk.
It's time for street talk when we talk about the street. You never do an introduction when you say it first, do you?
Yeah.
You just say street talk and then you start talking.
I think everyone can work it out for themselves.
No, street talk.
What storylines have we had this week,
right,
Emma?
This week, or week and a half, we've had The Rovers Returns.
Yeah, we're going to start off with that one because that kind of set the scene for a lot of what happened this week.
Surrogate is our second major storyline. Stitch Up. Yeah, that was me. I came up with that one.
That's a good one.
That's about the factory shenanigans.
Yeah. I think you got to explain the next one before you say the
name. The next one? What is the next one about?
It is about Chesney having to make the choice between does he follow his heart and go with Sinead, or does he need to get himself too caught up with getting revenge on Ryan? Sinead or Ryan? Or, as the storyline is called, Gemma?
Sinead or Connor?
Yeah. And
too much to Alejandro.
Yeah.
That's about Dev.
Yeah, of course.
And finally, World Wide Webster. The Adventures of Sally on the Internet.
Let's get started with The Rovers Returns. So, basically on Friday they were putting together the final touches, and Carl's forgotten to put an undercoat on. Owen's having a shout at him because Carl's determined to help out, wasn't he?
There was a whole bit about Owen doing some kind of shady dodgy dealings I thought was going to develop into a proper storyline, where he was buying some furniture of somebody in an auction.
Oh yeah,
he kept going off and having phone calls about it.
Oh yeah, didn't
nothing came of it.
No.
So maybe later on.
Maybe it was Ken.
Maybe later on it's going to turn out to be infested with lice or something.
Well, that'd be exciting.
But, pretty much they're all getting ready for the opening. Tina's getting moaned at because she's still working and everyone wants her to relax.
Yeah.
And on Sunday...
Well, she goes to and tells Stella that she wants to work back at the Rovers again, doesn't she, once it's open?
Yeah.
Yes.
On Sunday, Sean has to fetch newspapers because Gloria's decided to tart up the place a bit and put some newspapers by the bar.
Classy.
The Rovers is due to open at 2 p.m. And it's really exciting for everyone. I don't know. People are getting stressed about running out of cork over hot pots.
Yeah, we get to meet Paul's friend Anton. And that didn't go anywhere, did it? That was one of Tony's mates.
I think Ken must have been involved in a lot of this.
Rita's there with her photo of Betty that she's managed to get photocopied at the supermarket. So they can have Betty still looking down on them.
You were worried about this, weren't you?
What? About the Betty photo?
They wouldn't have the Betty photo.
Well, it just so happens that Rita has an exact replica of the same photo.
Yeah, it's funny that. There's drama. No lager's been ordered for special opening and they can't get any till Tuesday. Now,
it's all right, Carl's
saved the day. Pretend that this is tea. They're having a party and they haven't ordered any tea. Oh my god, what are they going to do? Carl has to go to the bistro to get some, and Leanne doesn't really want to give him any because she doesn't want him to be the knight in shining armour. But he says, no, you just bring it round, you be the hero, I don't care, I just want Stella to have a good day. Isn't he nice?
Yes, he's lovely.
Oh, it's all a bit boring.
Well, we get to see the final preparations in the bar, don't we? It all looked kind of pretty samey. The ready orange wallpaper, they didn't go for a massive overhaul, which I think there would have been an outcry for
they
if
wouldn't.
They had
They would
to.
Never change it now.
No.
Really, never change it.
Well, when they had the fire before, whenever it was in the
70s,
that was when they got rid of the select and stuff. So there were a few.
I don't know what that means.
That's that giant room that went off of the side where there's actually no space. So the Rovers became less TARDIS-like after the last fire. But
but British dramas are well known for that.
Well, it's pretty much the same, but it's got a newspaper rack. I was reading in some interviews the other week that they're going to slowly make little additions to it as the weeks go on. So we'll see how that goes.
Good for them.
Yeah.
The only real drama in this storyline was when the door stuck. When they tried to open it up for everyone to enter. But
they managed to open it. Cliffhanger resolved.
And everyone in the queue is wearing beige in honour of Stella. Yeah. It's true. Look back and you will see.
Apart from Eileen. Eileen was wearing red. She looked lovely.
Eileen bucked the trend.
Yeah.
So Nick and Leanne save the day with the lager. And Gloria makes a speech, or Stella makes a speech, and it's the end.
They have a toast for present and absent friends.
That's it.
So the Rovers is open. But that sets the scene for all the drama that was to later happen that week, such as the surrogate storyline, which took an unexpected twist this week because their little baby came early. Thank goodness they didn't drag it out for another few weeks. Although, the way it ended this week, maybe it still is quite a bit left to go. But anyway, Gary and Tina are in the cafe on Friday. This was last Friday, of course. And saying that Katie's going to keep quiet to Izzy because they all know the secret about Gary leaning over and going into a snog with Tina. But then Katie comes in and she starts saying, oh, you look really cosy together. And Tina flares up and storms out because she's fed up of it. And she's whinging on to Tommy, who's staying over for lunch with her.
Well, she's excited about starting at the Rovers, but Tommy doesn't know if she really should be starting a new job. But she decides she wants to quit from the yard and tells Owen.
Yeah.
So Owen then asks Gary if he knows why Tina would give up her cushy job working at the yard, because every young lady who lives on the street wishes that she was Owen's secretary. And he's like, well, I don't know. Do you know? No idea. So Tina has a drink with Rita and Dennis, and then Owen, Gary and Izzy turn up, and Tina just wishes they would die, basically.
Yeah, she's sick and tired. Around.
Yeah. So Owen's sort of teasing her and calling her a deserter, and Izzy starts acting all like concerned. She just seems to be trying to crush her with a kindness at the moment. And says, what did Owen do to annoy you? And Tina's like, just leave me alone, please. And then she tells Rita and Dennis that she's sick of windasses, which is a bizarre comment because Owen and Izzy aren't windasses.
There's not many windasses left. Yeah, and Anna.
Yeah, but she wasn't there. So when she leaves...
That was pretty much it, wasn't it? She left the episode and she was just fed up and says that she's in control of her own life, and Rita and Dennis were worried about her. So on Sunday, Gary was still going on to Tina about going back to work at the yard, but she won't.
Izzy's worried that Owen's upset Tina and she's going to find out why. But Gary just tells her to leave it alone, and she doesn't.
She can't. Izzy can't leave anything alone. And then so she gets accused of being like the mafia, the Flaming Mafia.
Not ginger enough to be the Flaming Mafia.
So, Gary could be in the Flaming Mafia.
Sean. Gary tries to talk to Tina in the smoking shelter, which is the best place to have a conversation with a pregnant woman. And Izzy overhears her talking about Gary's dirty little secret. So Tina tells her about him making a pass, and Izzy immediately decides she doesn't want to talk to Gary. She feels betrayed.
Never wants to speak to him again. But then the drama makes Tina go into labour. Did you know or suspect that that would happen?
What? Her that she would go into labour? No, I didn't. I knew that at some point she would have a baby. I guess that much.
Well, ITV had been putting out a load of adverts that kind of gave the game away.
Did they?
Yes.
I saw there was an ambulance and I thought it was going to be some kind of, like, fake out.
No,
or it would just
thing,
be like,
real thing.
Oh, Braxton Hicks.
Are you glad it's kind of all over?
Yeah. It's not over though, is it?
It's not. It's
We've
not
still
over.
Got pages and pages to get through.
So Izzy then starts shouting her mouth off on Monday about Gary making a pass at Tina as she gets bundled into an ambulance with Tommy.
Yeah, and Rita tells everybody to stop arguing because she's giving birth to a baby and they should just shut up and go to the hospital.
Yeah.
So they go to the hospital as well.
Rita and Dennis go as well afterwards because they're like her grandma or something.
Whatever.
They've got nothing better to do on a Sunday afternoon.
Well, I'd go. I don't know, actually. It's kind of boring.
I'd go if it was them.
I'd go if the Burger King was open.
Yeah.
So, Izzy, Gary and Owen and Anna all go to the hospital together.
Yeah, and they're all expecting to go in there and see the birth of this little baby, but...
That they paid for. But the midwife comes out and tells them Tina only wants to see Tommy.
Yeah.
What? Tommy?
I think this is the only time that Tina can... It's like she's got a bodyguard that she's wanted all this time to keep the windasses away.
Oh, yeah. So Owen complains that it's Izzy's baby, and I am surprised he didn't bring out his receipt book to prove it. And she should be able to go in, but... Izzy's kind of just mad at Gary at this point. She's not really worried. She's not really mad at Tina for doing it. She's mad at Gary for causing this whole problem. So Tina is giving birth and wishing that she'd never even decided to do this.
Good birthing acting. It seems so long ago.
How would I know? The only time I've experienced birth is coming out. I don't remember much about it.
Well, I think the baby wasn't very active very well at all when it was
the baby was the worst.
It was just kind of lying there.
Limp. Limp actor.
Well, in the waiting room, Rita and Dennis are feeling a bit out of place there, and Owen and Izzy are kind of moping around but saying the baby is a fighter like Izzy and it'll be fine. Because this baby, how far pregnant was she? 7 months or something? So I think it was like that.
Anna decides to go and confront Gary and sort of says, you know, tells him off for being an idiot. And she asks Gary what Tina did to make him make a pass at her. And he's like, nothing, nothing.
Yeah, it's like, did she lead you on or anything? And he's like, no, like, it's all my fault. She was just a sexist female.
Exactly. 5 years running.
We later see Katie and Ryan finding out from Eileen that Tina's in hospital. So they kind of rush
in. They come as well because, you know, more the merrier. So Tina then... in the birthing room, asks for Izzy to come in, but not Gary. And Tommy tells him to back off because he wants to go in anyway. So Izzy and Tommy go in together and the baby comes out!
Yes, we've got to call him the baby for the rest of the week because there's no name so far.
What should we call it? We should call it Gariz.
Gariz, Garizzy.
Is
Grizzly.
Izzy.
I don't know.
So, the baby doesn't cry.
No, but I've written a...
Out.
Did I write this word? Or did you write it?
Brachycardic. I wrote that.
What does that mean?
Something to do with...
Something with his heart, I think.
It's a regular heart, isn't it? I don't know.
But it's the midwife just says he's just
up.
Having this few difficulties because he's being born so early. And Izzy breaks down in tears.
But it was clearly the evening. I mean, I have trouble getting up in the mornings, but it's ridiculous.
Yeah, so Izzy's very, very sad. And then
she starts crying. And then here in the UK, we were treated to the hilarious cutaway to an advert break, which depicted a group of meerkats weeping over a matchbox coffin, which really couldn't have been picked better. But no, the baby's not dead in the matchbox coffin.
Being buried in Sally's back garden.
She's got a conservatory, you know. So, no, it's fine. Don't worry. We wouldn't laugh if it was really dead, even though it's a fake baby anyway.
Yeah.
So, when Katie and Ryan arrive, Gary asks them if they said anything, because he thinks that they're the ones that tipped her off.
Yes.
Noah's confused as to why Katie had known this but didn't tell him, because he's the master of the universe.
Yeah, he should know all.
And Gary's blaming them for the fact, well, Katie, for the fact that he had to miss out on the birth.
Yeah, so Katie's completely in the doghouse then for a couple of episodes, isn't she?
Yeah.
Because she kept it secret.
Yep. You can't win on Coronation Street if someone tells you a secret.
No.
Izzy comes in tears. She's crying. Owen comfort her. And Katie says she's sorry. And then Izzy's like, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
Doesn't want her to be there.
No. So Tina's recovering after the birth now, and Tommy starts his
wooing
and weekly and fawning over her, which lasts a whole week. He got separated for the entire rest of the week. And Katie, meanwhile, is upset that nobody's going to forgive her, and she wants to move in with Ryan.
Good idea.
That kind of moves into another storyline, so we'll come back to that later. They can go and see the baby.
He's doing all right now.
Yeah.
He's not dead in a matchbox. He's fine.
He does have his own little boxy thing to sit in.
It's called an incubator, not a matchbox. Yeah. It is. I know it's the NHS, but it's not quite that desperate. So Tommy goes off to get stuff for Tina, but she has high blood pressure and she has to stay in. So she and Izzy see the baby. So Gary wants to go and see it too.
Yeah, he's fed up of waiting in the waiting room, isn't he?
But Izzy and Gary have a confrontation in the corridor where she tells him that she doesn't want him anywhere near her.
I'm never speaking to you ever again.
Until another episode in the future.
Yeah.
Silly Izzy.
After all this, how sorry do you feel for Gary on like a scale of 1 to 10? Does he deserve all this that he's been put through?
No, I don't think so. Because although he had a massive crush, obviously, that developed, he didn't really realise that that's what was happening. He thought it was just because she was carrying his baby.
Yeah.
And once he made a pass and realised it was a terrible mistake, he kind of relented. But on the other hand, what would he have done if she had reciprocated?
Yeah.
He would have ruined everything. So I guess you can't. He's not blameless, is he?
He's not completely blameless, but I have been feeling sorry for him. Just having to listen to Izzy harping on for the rest of the week.
Yeah,
and now
Izzy,
he's being told he can't see the baby. And...
Yeah, but Izzy was already feeling left out and like she wasn't part of this family that she was trying to build with Gary because she wasn't carrying the baby. And then he turns around and does that.
I can't believe that she would fall out of love with him so quickly.
Because he betrayed her.
Only a bit.
Oh, really? How quickly would you fall out of love with me if I went off with some other guy because he was carrying my baby?
This is getting too complicated. Let's go on. Let's go on to Tuesday's episode. So, well, there's been no change in the baby's condition overnight.
Izzy pledges to never forgive Gary, but she doesn't blame Tina.
Yeah, Tina says that they need to try and sort it out, and that's kind of her line for the rest of the week, isn't
yes.
it? You yep. and Gary need to knock your heads together and sort things out.
Unfortunately for Tina, who wanted nothing to do with this baby once it was born, everything has conspired against her.
Yes.
Now, not only has Izzy and Gary had a falling out, and so she doesn't even know who's going to have the baby anymore, but the baby's so weak that it needs to be breastfed. So she has to express some milk. Stop laughing. Which she never planned to, because she wanted to feed it formula. So Izzy won't pressure her to do it, but of course Tina knows that it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, so they decide to go through with it. She goes off for a squeeze.
Gary meets up with Izzy outside the hospital and says, it's just a one-off.
Yeah.
But Izzy wants to know, well, how long have you fancied Tina?
Yeah. Well, he tries to get into the room to see the baby, doesn't he? But Izzy's not letting him in. She says she can't trust him, it's all over.
Again.
And Tina wants to know if she's sure, because she needs them to think about the baby.
And Izzy is convinced that she can raise it alone.
Yeah.
Which will, no doubt, if she does decide that this is her plan, come back to bite her on the bum. Because I remember when she first wanted to have a baby, one of Owen's main reasons that he thought she couldn't have one was because she was disabled and she wouldn't be able to look after it properly.
Yeah.
I don't think for one minute they would dare to go down the route of trying to say that Izzy couldn't take care of her by herself because she's
Well, they kind of already have, though.
No, they haven't.
Well, only because she couldn't carry suggesting it.
She didn't want to give birth to it, but
maybe she will look after it on her own, and it will be the making of her.
I think she's all right as she is. I don't think she needs the making of her, but
it'd be quite interesting to watch.
So
later on, Owen's round at the hospital, isn't he? And he's having a look at the baby through the window, and she's still insisting to him that it's over with Gary, but he's like, just leave it a few days, because he knows that Gary regrets it. But she's like, no, don't want him in my life. Get rid of him.
Meanwhile, Tommy is telling Tina how smart, funny, and beautiful she is.
Then he gets a bit shy and leaves.
Yeah,
and
he realises he's been annoying and leaves. Owen and Nana are talking about Gary and Izzy at home, and it's a bit awkward, really, because they're their children.
Yeah. Could this come between Owen and Nana?
Owen starts saying that it was all his idea that she had a surrogacy, and he pushed them into it, which is totally not what happened.
He did eventually, didn't he? He was against it at the beginning, but I think once he got around the idea and liked the fact that Tina was offering up her womb, then that's when he started saying, yeah, it's a good idea.
Well, Owen has a manly cry because he thinks the baby's going to die. That lovely chap. On Thursday, the baby's still not dead. Fizz and Tyrone go to visit Tina, and Tyrone becomes the advocate for all fathers for justice. That's what Tyrone's about.
Yeah, he is the expert now at not being able to see your baby.
Yes.
He's also the nation's greatest actor.
Not the nation's greatest actor.
Soap actor.
He's the nation's favourite soap actor. The nation's favourite actor, of course, is Del Boy, isn't it?
Del Boy.
Yeah.
David Jason. Is the nation's favourite
actor.
He's
no David Jason, but he's getting there.
Well, Gary appeals to Tyrone. He says, let me see the baby for a minute.
And everyone knows that Tyrone's "let me just have the baby for a minute" turns into "let me kidnap the child and try to take it to France." So I don't know why anyone's listening to him. So anyway, Tina relents and lets him go in to see the baby. So of course, the next thing that happens is that Izzy turns up.
Yes. Because, well, Gary's been, was in with the baby, sort of whispering on, boring it to death about playing football or whatever.
Yeah.
And then, Izzy turns up and is like, oh, I think I'll go and see the baby now.
Everyone's kind of acting really weird, but then Tina says, hey, sorry, I can't lie.
Gary's there.
Yeah, sorry.
So Izzy storms in, doesn't she, and says to Gary to get out. And
I think she's got a special setting on her wheelchair, like the storm in, storm out setting.
Now, the twist that came at the end of that episode is quite a good one, and not one that I was expecting, which was when Tina banned both Gary and Izzy from seeing the baby.
Because that was awesome.
That was, because I think when we were going through the beginning of the surrogacy storyline, the legalities of it is that the baby is still officially Tina's until she kind of properly gives it up. Isn't that right?
I don't remember.
I think it was. I think she has to kind of sign it over to Izzy or something.
It's so weird, isn't it?
So, yeah, I like that. And Gary and Izzy do need their heads banged together.
Yeah, they do. They really do.
But it is going to make it all the more difficult for Tina to give up the baby when the time comes, of course.
I don't think she wants to keep it.
Oh, she's still... I don't know. Well, she's starting to make happy families with Tommy by the end of the episode, isn't she? We always thought that it was the inevitable conclusion to this storyline, that Tina would want to keep the baby.
I know. I don't think I thought it was inevitable. I thought it was just like one of the possible outcomes. I don't know. But I hope that doesn't happen.
Well,
Izzy gets mad because Tina won't let her see the baby.
Yeah, this is tonight's episode now. Yeah.
But Tina insists that until she and Gary start thinking about the baby and not themselves, she's not going to see it. So that was just your little recap for everyone.
Yeah, previously on Coronation Street. Yes.
So.
Gary and Tina go to the pub, don't they? Not to Gary and Tina. Gary and Izzy drowning their sorrows in the pub later. And he says, oh, lunging at Tina was the biggest mistake of my life.
It sounded like he was trying to rape her.
I know. Well, I think that's what it was like in Tina's head. I mean,
really? Oh, in Izzy's head.
Yeah, in Izzy. Why do I get those two mixed up? same problem that Gary's having, I guess.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, because Izzy just thinks that it was something much bigger than it actually was. If only she had watched the same episode of Coronation Street with us.
Well, nobody's really. I mean, Tina didn't really say anything to mitigate what happened. She just said, look, it wasn't anything to do with me. I don't really care, but just get back together and take this baby off of me. If I was her, I'd be saying to her, look, I didn't do anything, but I can understand where Gary's coming from, and all he did was lean over to kiss me. He didn't do anything else.
Mm.
He didn't, like, passionately try to embrace me.
No,
or,
he didn't,
like,
force himself on me.
No, I just, yeah, she could have said this, but...
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, Gary sees a glimmer of hope when Izzy says that we need to be civil, and he thinks that it means we're back together again. But she's like, no.
He means civil partners. But
he,
no.
What she actually means is we just need to be good parents for the bear. And she may forgive him one day, but she'll never forget.
Never forget. That's what I say. Never forget.
And then we kind of end the episode with a little scene between Tina and Tommy, because he said earlier on that they should go to Ibiza together and put everything behind them.
Boring.
And then Tina's like, oh yeah, maybe we should. And he said,
boring.
Oh, we should have separate rooms. And then she said, no, because they love each other.
Boring.
And at last, Tina and Tommy are back together.
No, don't take him back. He's a scumbag.
Is he?
Yeah.
I thought it was just boring.
He's boring. He's a boring scumbag. Don't take him back, because he just had a free ride now. The whole time she had to give birth, like, carry this baby, give birth to it by herself to pay off his bloody debts. And now it's all over with. He's coming sniffing back.
No, he's been sniffing about for ages.
I don't
he
like
would
him.
Have supported her
no.
if she'd have taken him back that
no,
month ago.
No, because he rejected her when she was doing him a favour, and he should... That's a worse betrayal than what Gary did to Izzy.
Mm.
Mm.
So where's it going to go from here, there?
Tommy's going to die.
That's not going to happen. So it looks...
I think Tommy should die.
Well, if Gary and Izzy's plan to be friendly parents goes through...
Friendly parents?
Then all I can imagine is that on Monday they will get the baby back, but...
Yeah.
I don't know, it's still...
There'll be a few months of them.
I think it's still very, very likely that Tina's going to not be able to separate herself from this baby.
To be honest, I don't see why they would go down the route of swapsy parents when they already have that with Katie and Chesney, and that's boring as hell as it is. I mean, how interesting is it to listen to people negotiating babysitting slots? Nobody even likes doing it for themselves, let alone watching somebody else do it on television. Can you take Joseph tonight? No, I only want to take him last week. I don't want to take him. I want to go with Ryan. No one cares. It's boring.
That's why they need to have this creche open up in the butcher's shop, isn't it?
Yeah, just put him in the butcher's shop.
Hang him up on a hook. What's our next storyline? Oh, Stitch Up, isn't it?
Stitch Up! Stitch Up!
You're so proud of coming up with that title,
aren't you? I came up with that really quickly.
Scroll to the top of our notes.
Right,
that's the first
okay.
thing. Now, this... What happened... I can't remember. What was happening on Friday? Was Friday the pretend robbery? Yes, it was. So, Carla can't believe that Rob would even want to turn up to work with this new job title, because he was put in packing on Wednesday last
he's
week.
He's, like, in charge of packing or something, which I thought was Tracy's job.
Well, yeah.
Basically, it's, like, the person who is in charge of Kirk.
Yeah.
Because I don't think Tracy is like a cat, she wouldn't listen to anyone.
Well, he's got a plan anyway, which he alluded to at the end of Wednesday's episode. And they turn up late to the factory, and Michelle's like lording it over them. And Rob is very, very compliant with Carla's orders, and because he's going
to
rob her later.
He's pretending to care about his job.
Yeah. He later tells Tracy that he's going to pretend that the silk that she's been transporting has been stolen, because Carla shouldn't shield for it anyway.
So, it's really not robbing anyone, it's a victimless crime.
You're as bad as he is. And it will earn them £20,000.
Wow.
Which would be enough to start up their own little business.
That's enough to be able to drink regularly at the bistro.
So, Carla sees Tracy drive off, and she apologises to Rob because he's been so nice. And he says, I'm sorry, the position's not very glamorous. And then we later see Tracy meet up with this Lee bloke in some dodgy backstreet area.
Who's the person who's going to be stealing the silk of her. And she decides to rip her clothes to make the robbery look genuine.
Yeah.
Later on, we see Carla a bit desperate, wondering where Tracy is, leaving her a voice message. She asks Rob where she's got to. He gets a bit defensive and says that Carla doesn't trust her. But then Tracy bursts in with a bloody lip. She's been robbed and I took everything.
Yeah, there was proper acting
Yeah.
from Tracy and from Kate Ford there. It's kind of Carla suspected her right from before it even happened, so there was no hope for the pair for the rest of the week, really,
No,
was
not really, no.
there?
It's like watching 2 3-year-olds trying to whip their mother.
Yeah, so she says she was driving through the industrial estate when she saw something in the road that was a person, and then two blokes came with the baseball caps and scarves on their faces, and they took the van and the silk.
And Rob's like, oh no, they took the silk. Do you know how much that was worth? That was worth £20,000 or possibly
Roughly.
more on the black market. Who knows if you could get a buyer for that?
Yeah, and he's like pretending to be angry with Tracy, and then Carla wants to report it to the police. And then,
It turns out Tracy's already done that, of course, because she is a real victim of crime, not just pretending.
yeah.
The police walk in to find Tracy, who has reported an assault, not a theft.
Well,
Carla and
Callum,
Michelle
yeah.
think it's a scream straight away
Yeah.
because they're Rob and Tracy are idiots. And Michelle says it can't be because why would he do that to his own sister? And Carla says, I think he would.
Yeah.
Basically, she knows. And Rob comes along and Michelle starts to go, who would go to all that trouble for just a van? I wonder, how would they know that there was even silk inside? And Rob starts thinking, I didn't think of that. So, Carla's got to phone the insurance when the police have finished hearing Tracy's lies. So, Rob starts being all defensive about Tracy having to fight off the robbers and Carla doesn't even care. And Michelle says, look, we don't know the true story yet, so we just have to find, you're gonna have to let the police investigate. And Carla says sorry for all the horrible things that poor Tracy had to go through, and she gives her money to buy a brandy, which Rob and Tracy pretend to be disgusted about. But then the other side of the door, they start laughing like
Evil
evil,
laugh.
wicked cackling. And
So
they laugh again later on when Rob cleans Tracy's face of all the wounds that are actually real, which is
yeah,
quite impressive.
well, she did iron her arm that one time, didn't she?
Yep.
Well, Deirdre comes in and finds out what's happened, and she's like, "Oh,
Oh
Tracy,
no,
what happened
Tracy.
here? No,
Oh, let me get Ken.
I can't.
He's
Stuck
not
in a
there.
toilet."
So, Carla and Peter are talking about how Rob probably did it. And Peter says, Tracy will probably do it. And he pointed out what you just said about the iron and everything. And he wants to go to find out if he can spot Tracy in a lie. He goes around to see her. Meanwhile, Rob's telling Tracy the silk's arrived and the van's been dealt with. When Peter and Carla come round, they give Tracy some flowers, and Peter's like, oh no, what happened, poor Tracy? Tell me everything, all the
Yeah, he was
details.
funny.
Don't leave anything out because I'll know. And Rob starts getting a bit annoyed. Says, are you playing detective? Maybe you should, stop being horrible to your sister. But he says, no, we could uncover some new clues if we ask Tracy to go over the details again. And then he starts to speculate about whether they knew the robbers knew the silk was there all along. And Rob says, surely it must be the van that they were after. But then Carla says the van was turned up, has turned up burnt out.
Yes.
Which Rob must have known that's what the guy was going to do with the van.
Yeah, you'd
It
have thought
kind of
so.
exposes the whole plot, doesn't
There were so many plots in this hole. I mean, holes in this plot. Oh dear, it's late
So,
tonight. It's a late recording.
Rob and Tracy decide to take their little tete-a-tete into the Guinness and have a snog. And then Rob decides to ask if she really did murder her ex. This is just like when he asked her about her kidney.
Yeah.
He must think she's fascinating.
All these new things that he's
He's
discovering
like,
about
I've never lived on a soap before. Tell me, what have you been up to?
It is, she's like, she doesn't say yeah, but she pretty much does. Well, she
Yeah, oh
said, "I've
yeah.
never murdered anyone I actually liked." And he was like, "Okay, then that's fine with me."
I know, it's like, Rob, you're not likable.
No. I wonder whether he's going to end up murdered. Because he can't, I really don't think he's going to stay in the soap for long. Because
Now he's a proper villain, isn't
he's a
he?
proper villain. He's really unpopular. I wonder whether history may repeat
I
itself.
think it would be awesome if this storyline ended with Tracy killing him again, like another one again,
Yeah.
and going to prison, and that's the end of Tracy. Even though I really like her being in it. She
She.
kind of she's gone over she's kind of what's the word? Tricked the Corrie curse of villains have to get their comeuppance.
Yeah.
She's still owed her time for what she did to Charlie.
That would be really good. She does. She needs to.
Something horrible
She needs to do
something
something
horrible needs
horrible
to
to
be
Rob.
in store. for Tracy.
Yeah, so Sunday, Kirk's in it for an episode and he's feeling guilty that Tracy got robbed and he starts singing It Should Have Been Me.
I don't know that song.
No, I don't know either, but Carla's, he was anyway.
Carla's pretending to be sympathetic and Tracy goes home to bed.
Carla was funny all this time because she knew, didn't she?
Oh yeah, she told Peter on whatever day it was before that if she finds proof that it was him, that Rob that did it, she's going to make him suffer more than prison would ever make him suffer. So she's got her guns out.
Well, hey.
Oh, shut up. So.
Well, she gets a drink bought for her in the Rovers later by Kirk, doesn't she?
Tracy does.
And she's like, oh, I should get mugged more often.
And then they do like little clinky glasses and then they remember that they're sitting opposite Carla and Michelle and they sort of look like sheepishly at them. And Michelle and Carla are like, you sad losers.
and Rob's even saying stop milking it so much to her. And
yeah, but Tracy loves it. Tracy just loves this. She's not going to give up.
Yeah, so on Monday, Rob was having trouble finding a buyer for his silk. And Tracy's demanding that Carla buys her another drink for the shot, because this is actually still Sunday. This was set, wasn't it, in the Rovers. And Rob's getting worried about it, but Tracy's like, no, it'll be fine. So in the meantime, Carla needs to find some more silk. And Rob and Tracy says that they need to shift it soon, because they're suspecting that Carla and Michelle are suspecting them.
Exactly. And Rob tells Tracy that she has to really do the selling because everyone in the industry knows him, so he's not going to really be able to get rid of it. And then Tracy sulks, and this is when I came up with the idea that we should call this Stitch Up, because Tracy thinks that Rob's going to stitch her up by doing.
But by Tuesday, it's all okay because she says she's found this buyer for the fabric.
It's Jennifer Saunders.
It's Jennifer Saunders of Sunderland. Well, Michelle's on the phone to them later because they immediately phone up and say someone's trying to flog them dirt cheap silk. And they get the
seller's number, give it a ring, and Tracy picks her phone up.
Yeah.
Classic how to catch the villain in a Hollywood movie.
Well, that's what Kirsty did on her wedding, isn't it? It's just kind of the same.
Just again. Like, it's just, I don't understand why any crime ever gets unsolved in this country.
Yeah, no, I said, why didn't Tracy have Michelle's number on her phone, but we won't start this conversation again because we had it earlier in the week.
Because that's just how the plot went. Okay. Because some people don't have every single work number programmed into their mobile phone that they use for personal reasons.
People don't really know how to use mobile phones on Coronation Street.
Well, they also don't know how to use the internet.
So, Carla's
telling... Don't forget that Dennis had a whole storyline about learning how to use his PIN code for his bank card, okay?
Carla tells Peter, he's pretty sympathetic about it later on, doesn't he?
But he's like, why haven't you phoned the police if you've got proof that it's her? But she says, no, it's a matter between me and Rob.
Yeah, then she goes on to this blimmin' long monologue about back in whenever they were growing
Suddenly,
up.
Suddenly, they invent this backstory between Rob and Carla, which is infuriating because these two characters have been in this show together as brother and sister the whole time that Rob's been in it, and they've never bothered to give them any backstory or little sob story about what happened when they were kids. But all of a sudden, neither of them will shut up about what happened
when we were little. Rob stole some money from me to took his mates to the arcade and the cinema, and he said he'd never do it again.
Well, really, she's not crying about that. She's crying about the fact she wanted that coat, and I don't blame her. It must have been really cool.
Well, she is convinced that he's going to back out of it. He'll do the right thing, doesn't she?
Well, she's stupid. Really, she deserves this. On Thursday, Peter tells Carla, I'm not going to forgive Tracy for this, and you shouldn't forgive Rob. And they're going to get away with it. And Carla again says, by the time I'm finished with them, they'll wish they'd gone to prison. Which is a bit of a hollow threat, because she doesn't do anything in the end. So Tracy decides... Tracy wants money to be lavished upon her, but Rob points out that they can't be seen to be spending lots of money, because it's going to be obvious. So then Carla decides that her way of getting revenge for this little plot of theirs is to tell Tracy to sweep the loading bay, which I believe is part of her job anyway. So how is that revenge? But because she comes up to her and is giving it all that, Tracy decides to react unfavourably towards it because she doesn't really care about her job now. She thinks she's got this £20,000 in the bank. So she starts giving Carla a bit of attitude.
Yeah, that was good. She's like, oh, you're saying, no, you're nothing.
Yeah. She starts telling Cullen that she's nothing, and she's on her high horse, and she's basically got given the factory from her husband, and she didn't work for anything.
Yeah.
And so Carla just tells her to get the broom and go and clean the loading bay. And all the factory girls are really shocked that Carla didn't just sack her on the spot.
But Carla's got a plan. So yes. She phones up her friend Sandra and gets her to pretend to be Saunders of Sutherland.
Sunderland. Yes. Meanwhile, Rob tells Tracy to be careful because Carla's going to flatten her if she carries on like that. But Tracy's just overexcited because she's got this buyer to get the silk. And Rob suddenly gets cold feet when he starts talking about how Carla's always helped him when they were kids. But Tracy tells him that loyalty is a two-way street and he's entitled to his payday for the loyalty that he's shown Carla over the years, which I'm failing to remember any time at which he's actually done anything nice for her.
They did quite a good job of sort of keeping us hanging on whether Rob would or wouldn't go through with the plan.
No, I thought he was going to go through with it.
I think it was inevitable, but it was kind of... I kind of did wonder sometimes whether he would or not. So anyway, Tracy gets this phone call from Sandra, and who tells her that she's going to meet them in this lockup after work. And Carla is sort of really upset by it because she's like, well, this is it. This is Rob's chance to pull out of it, the final chance. And Michelle says that Tracy is a master manipulator and it's all her and it's not Rob's fault. And she manipulated Ryan and now she's manipulating Rob. And Carla's like, no, he's a grown man. He can use his own brain.
Well, what she meant to say was that Ryan's a bloody idiot. And of course, Tracy manipulated him because it's no harder than tricking a hamster.
A half-wit could manipulate Ryan.
Exactly. But she doesn't say that. She's a bit more polite. So she's still kind of holding out hope that Rob's going to back out.
But he doesn't. And then they go to this lock-up at the end of the episode. And there was quite a nice little cliffhanger where Rob opens up the door and it's Carla there saying, oh, here you got some silk to sell me.
Yes.
Yeah. It's kind of a nice cliffhanger. I mean, all this week it's been the Corrie big week, the Britain's Got Talent, so Coronation Street's on at 9 o'clock big week, and it's not been exactly a factory siege week, has it?
I don't think that they prepared for this.
They must have done. They must have known that this was going to happen. But
I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt and saying that there was some kind of scheduling conflict or some kind of uncertainty where they weren't really sure when they were going to be screening these 9 o'clock episodes.
That's not been any more dramatic than a normal week.
I think there's too many instances of like this Thursday and Friday's episode ran to me very much like one episode
like on Friday, two-parter,
because you had the cliffhanger at the end of Thursday that ran immediately into Friday's episode. So I really don't think that,
but they did have that Sunday episode which was definitely supposed to be on a Sunday, wasn't it, because they were like, oh, the Rovers is opening
on
Sunday.
Are you really going to continue to insist that they knew all along that they were going to have these episodes on after 9 o'clock, and you'd rather say that they were this rubbish?
They weren't that bad, they just weren't as exciting. I mean,
they're not okay, there's nothing wrong with it. They're not bad episodes, like you say, but this isn't an event week. This hasn't been a climactic...
Unless you're really into the surrogacy storyline.
I mean, I don't exciting think anyone things is. Happen, but I do think they must have been hedging their bets and not quite sure whether this was going to be the week that they had the 9 o'clock episodes.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, so, I'd rather say that's the case than say that they knew all along and this was their carefully cultivated plan to keep us hooked every day.
Well, anyway, today's episode, Carla bursts into the lockup and starts pushing Rob around and says, oh, you always get caught. Can't believe it. I gave you all these chances to get out of it.
Well, she did. On Thursday, she kept trying to give him ways out and he didn't take any of them.
Yeah. And she was like saying, she tells Peter to call the police, but he doesn't believe that she will. Because he's still got her twisted around his finger a little bit, hasn't he?
They're both stupid. That's my conclusion of this storyline.
Mm,
Carla and Rob are stupid.
Well, he starts slagging off the business and Michelle says that she's a plodder, not a grafter. And Carla's still loyal to her because she's a conner. And
she loves conners.
Yeah, and then she starts calling Carla the smelly girl with one pair of shoes.
I know. it was just like they were kids.
But it works anyway because Carla doesn't phone the police. She just takes the silk and goes home.
She sacks Rob and Tracy, I'll have you know.
Good job too.
Yeah, she's finished with them, she says.
But he says we were finished 20 years ago.
Yeah, whatever.
So Rob goes over to the Ginnell to meet Tracy and says it jigs up, and but he starts blaming her for it, doesn't he?
Yep.
And he says that we need to start letting Peter know that if he is insistent on getting Rob arrested and sent down, then Tracy's getting sent down as well.
But he's clever enough to say to Tracy, make sure that Peter knows that Amy will suffer if you go to prison. Not make sure that you appeal to Peter's brotherly love for you. Make sure that he realizes poor little niece is going to be an orphan yet again.
And then Tracy goes, "Oh yeah, Amy, I haven't seen her for 6 months. I
Where's
think
that? Well, she's died of being lactose intolerant. Remember that, Tracy? Do you remember that she can't drink milk? I don't think you do.
where has Amy been all this time?
God knows. Well, you know how they always hire
She's
actors
probably in the
that
back of the van with all that silk, and she's abandoned to heaven."
Oh, shouldn't laugh at dead children. Bad.
No. So, Peter, Carla, and Michelle and Steve are having dinner in the bistro later that night.
Because that's what you do after you've bust a plot against you.
Yeah,
You go
you
to
have a
the bistro.
celebration bistro meal. Michelle points out to Peter that he'd be dobbing Tracy in, and he does like go, "Oh yeah." But Carla decides to phone Rob because she wants to meet up with him. So she says, "Look, I'm not going to send you back to prison because there's no point in that, but I want you out of my life." And she says, "Well, you got to give me your share of the factory back," which he's not having any of. And then she says, "He's not her brother, just some loser she grew up with."
And basically, if he doesn't sign over his share, he goes down.
I believe they're falling out a lot more than I believe Izzy's falling out. Carla feels like she means it and she's being
Yeah.
serious, whereas Izzy being a little bit of a petulant child. So,
I just think all this like fake animosity they've got between them, they never had any of this. Like it was when he first arrived, it was almost like you could forget that they were related most of the time because they never acted like it. And somehow Rob's got this kind of weird attitude out of nowhere that he saved everybody at the factory.
he is. He thinks he's the savior of underworld, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, I suppose he has been thinking that for a while, but I can't
He's
believe
very up
how
himself.
delusional he's gotten. It obviously didn't take much for Tracy to push him right over the edge.
Well, speaking of Tracy, he goes over to Zia at number one, and he's been drinking, and he says, "Oh, he
He
tells her
tells
what's
her
happened."
exactly what happens, and then Deirdre overhears the whole thing.
Oh, Tracy.
She can't believe that Rob and Tracy would do that.
Well, she kind of can because she calls Rob
Well.
a rat and she says, "Yeah, Carla's right about you, Tracy. You are scum.
Yep, and get Rob out of the house.
Worse than murdering Charlie."
Yep. But Rob and Tracy are undaunted in the face of adversity and decide to pledge to take Underworld down
Yeah, they're going to
by
start their
taking over.
own business. Da, da, da.
Doing what? What? Well,
Rival
do you know
knickers.
what? They've probably been listening to this podcast and they're going to steal all of our brilliant business ideas and turn that shop into, what did we say? A crash.
No,
A charity shop.
I don't think they'll blow Underworld out of the water with a charity shop.
Yeah, but all of those ideas that we came up with are brilliant.
They are, but I guess they're supposed to be setting up this rival
Of
knicker
course, I
firm,
know, it's a
because
joke.
even though, as we discussed last week, we don't
Although
really know
you
how
just say.
Weatherfield can even support one factory like
Can I
that,
just
let
say,
alone
it's,
two.
you called it a knicker farm. It's not a knicker
Farm.
farm.
I've been saying it all wrong tonight.
Oh, I don't understand how they could set up a rival knicker farm.
Right, that was it for that storyline. What have you thought of that storyline this week?
That was quite good.
What the storyline was?
That was, yeah.
Yeah, it was good. It was better than the surrogate storyline.
I think there could have been more explosions. I would have liked to have seen the van on fire, but if possible.
Well, I like Carla and I like Tracy. I don't really like Rob, but he has been kind of interesting to watch this week.
I did say to you, I'm going to be wound up the whole time watching Tracy and Rob because already it's annoying me how Tracy and Rob seem to think that Rob is the most amazing business genius since Alan Sugar.
All that time in prison, he would probably sit there. He probably did like a degree from prison.
Yeah. What's it called? Business something or other.
I don't know. The main problem I had it with it was it seemed to be like a repeat of a storyline. I'm sure they've had before
Yep.
them Carla tricking Rob and Tracy
Yep.
and saying, "Oh, I'm gonna." Then they arrange a business meeting at the bistro one time, and then, oh,
Yep.
it turned out to be Carla.
Yep, it's a load of rubbish. It's the same storyline again.
But
It's annoying.
It's been bigger.
How many times can Carla make the same mistake over and over again?
Well, hopefully now she's this properly really, drawn a line under it.
For this to be a probably interesting storyline and to move on from what we've already had before, because so far, like you say, this is just a repeat of what we've already seen, there needs to be blood. Someone needs to die. There needs to be some kind of horrible plot to murder Carla again, because murdering Carla's like one of the main storylines in Coronation Street, apart from having someone else's baby.
No, I just think that thing horrible needs to happen to Rob.
Well,
at Tracy's hand.
Either way. There needs to be bloodshed before I'm going to be interested in this storyline.
Well, maybe somebody can get their finger sewn up again.
Yeah, maybe.
Right, Sinead or Connor. So, Fizz is... this is Friday, wasn't it? Fizz is telling Chez that he doesn't need to lift weights, and she's being a very sort of nice sisterly figure. He says, oh, everyone does it, and I'm sick of being pushed around. And he also reveals that he's got this date with Sinead that night. So he goes off clothes shopping to get some cool clothes so that Sinead thinks he's brilliant.
Well, really, he just gets his clothes, drinks a beer, and looks miserable, I think. That was what happened to him pre-date with Sinead.
Yeah, but he's actually quite nice during the date, isn't he?
No.
He's not. That was the other day, wasn't it?
Yeah, so him and Sinead are in the bistro when Ryan and Katie walk in, and Chez immediately starts complaining.
Look who it is.
Oh, where's Joseph then? I really think if he's that worried, he should go and find where the kid is. Because he only ever seems to complain about where Joseph is as like a way of annoying Katie.
Yeah.
Not like he actually gives a crap where the kid is.
No. Well, Sinead's like, look, do you want to get back with her or not? And he's like, no.
No, I don't even like her. She's rubbish.
Well, he then starts to try and show off to Katie that he's totally over her by kissing Sinead. And then he drags her back home. And says, oh, do you want to go inside? He's a little bit too forward.
She knows he's only doing it to wind Katie up.
He was horrible, wasn't he? He said, yeah. I've wasted my evening now because she won't
sure. And so he says, you're messing me around, but this is all my fault. It's a stupid idea. What a waste of an evening. I'll walk you to the bus stop. At this point, I would never speak to him again if I was Sinead.
Was she in it for the... Oh, no, she was in it on Tuesday, wasn't she? I like the scene later on in the episode with the new camera angle in the corner shop.
Security cam angle.
Yeah, because Chesney's reaching up for this vodka and Dev's like, oh, can you reach it?
And Chez is like, yeah, I can, actually. Thanks, £9.79, thanks.
So on Sunday, Katie's moaning about having to look after Joseph again. I think she hates this child.
I think everyone hates Joseph.
Because she's already ironed her dress for the Rovers reopening. So in the...
God, what a povo, ironing a dress. That means it must be not a new one. You only ever wear new stuff for openings.
Especially for a special do's like the opening of the Rovers.
I hope it was beige.
So yet again in the Rovers, Chesney's like saying, where's Joseph? Where's Joseph? And then he gets Beth annoyed by saying that Sinead was clingy, and he tries to start a fight with Ryan again, saying, I can see you smirking.
And then Ryan comes back with the worst one-liner I've ever heard on Coronation Street, and says, what, like smirking a cigarette?
That's northern humour.
Which means nothing. It has no context whatsoever. I don't know whether that was supposed to be like Ryan is so dumb that he thinks that's a good comeback.
I think it probably was.
Yeah, but it would have been nice to have seen the other characters in the pub react like we did, which is to go, what did he say? Smirking a cigarette. Now that's got to go down as one of the worst quotes this year.
Yes, okay. So Izzy tells Katie later on that she wound Chesney up, and even though she's supporting her in it, she's not going to turn her back on Chesney because actually he's not done anything wrong. And then that's when she starts rubbing it in, saying, oh, Chesney's like Gary, he's so loyal, because at this point she doesn't know the horrible truth.
And then Katie suggests Gary's no saint before leaving.
Yeah. So on Tuesday, Sinead had like a second date with Chesney, and he was much nicer to her that time, and he apologises, and they agreed to take
She's
it slower.
She's stupid for going out for a second date with him.
Well, they're now a couple, it looks like. No. Which I'm pleased about.
No.
You're not.
Don't you think that if
he
really...
doesn't deserve
yeah,
her.
Yeah, there you go.
But I'm glad that he's finally got someone. And
well, actually, it's the I think awesome about Sinead. She does deserve him. If she's that stupid to go out with him, then she deserves every second.
But no sooner have they kind of started to get things off on good footing than they go outside and he spots Katie and Ryan moving all their stuff in together because she's moving in with him. And he's like, oh, what are you doing? What are you doing? Where's Joseph? Blah, blah, blah. And Sinead is like, that's very peeved because he's still caught up in the past. And then we just had a little bit on Thursday that Ryan wants to take Katie to a gig. But what about this Joseph again?
I'm surprised at this point one of them doesn't go, sorry, Joseph, who's Joseph?
I think they'll find, one of these days, they'll say, I thought you had Joseph. No, I thought you had Joseph.
One day, Joseph's going to come down the stairs, like as a grown man, and be like, I can look after myself, I'm 25.
Oh my god, I mean, you imagine Katie still being in it, and Ryan still being in it in 25 years' time, that's a depressing thought. Well, anyway, Chesney says that he can look after her today, so they go to the gig.
Boring.
And then they come back, and Katie and Michelle have a bit of a bonding session over the difficulties of being a young mum.
Well, great for them.
Yeah, what a wonderful storyline that was. So, the next storyline, which is our Too Much to Allah Handle storyline, it was a bit bitty. And at the beginning, we had it as part of the Rover's Return storyline, but it seems to kind of be going into its own thing, because Dev's moaning that the post is arriving for Sunita, which is very, very confusing for the children, because they don't understand that post still comes to dead people.
Why don't they understand that?
I don't know. But Gloria and Sophie are worried about him, and Glow says that she fears that he'll never be the same again.
Yeah, well, I don't think she really thinks that. Everyone knows that she just says things to be dramatic.
Yes. So Ardy has been a bit of a pain this week. He's been playing up at school, and Peter's there lending a sympathetic ear to Dev. And Sally suggests to Sophie that she invites Dev over for chicken and mushroom pie. Mm.
Really, it should be fish fingers if it's going to be a celebration tea.
That's, yeah. So Dev tells the twins to be good and start getting in trouble. And Mary's there. She was only in it for a little bit, wasn't she?
He seems to be trying to get rid of Mary as his nanny. I don't know whether they had some kind of focus group who, like, really hate Mary or something. But I thought it was a good storyline. It's gone nowhere.
It was. It has gone nowhere. And he's suddenly like, I've got no one to look after the children. But I don't know where Mary's been this week. And Mary's sort of being the wise woman again, saying, oh, maybe you should go through your grief together.
Maybe you should go through your grief together. That's my wise woman.
It's good. So on Sunday, Dev tells Mary that he can't go to the Rovers because the kids are playing up. And he says that he'll still pay Mary, and she says she'll cook him dinner. So he's still being at Eloy upstairs, building a den to shut Dev out. And Mary like tries to give him hot chocolate and stuff, but it's no good. So Mary says, look, we're not going to be able to solve this. Just go to the Rovers anyway. So he does. Now, this den he was building, are we to take it now that he made this den so they could make their little book or card or whatever it was that they were making, a little scrapbook? Is that all it was about this week? That they were being... know. They didn't want to speak to Dev because they were making this Sunita scrapbook?
I guess. I don't know.
They didn't make that totally clear, but it looks like it, doesn't it? So on Monday... Well, he says that Ardy's got a bruise and he wants to know if Simon said anything about him fighting at school, but Leanne doesn't know anything about it.
Now, this is the second school-related storyline to do with children having secrets that has been raised because Craig had a problem.
Yeah.
Beth's little kid.
Yeah.
Now, I can only assume that Ken was involved in all of these storylines that have gone. Obviously... beating children up to
he's
get...
He's got form. Aidan Critchley.
He's been beating children up outside the school to get pub furniture off them so he can sell them to Owen at a knockdown rate. But they had to cut it all out.
Cut it all out. Can't have him in it. So we later had kind of the Carl and Stella sort of trying to get into the storyline, didn't they? Because Carl's gone round to see Dev because Stella's worried about what's going to happen to him. And Dev's like, what are you doing being my friend again? It's just because you're guilty about... sort of everything that happened with Sunita. And Carl's like, yeah, I suppose so. And Dev apologises to him. So Carl sits and sulks for a bit and then he goes back to the pub and he says, I had a good long chat with Dev and he's all okay.
Lies. On Tuesday, Stella hears from Sophie that Dev is struggling and confronts Carl about when he said that everything was fine. And he says, oh, I didn't want to worry you. Typical Weasley git that he is. So she goes over to see Dev. And invites him out for dinner on Friday.
He doesn't want to leave the kids with Mary, though, for some insane reason. So they decide to have dinner at his house instead.
How lovely. So Thursday, there's a brief mention about this again because Carl tries to get out of going, but Stella won't hear of it. So on Friday is when Dev is preparing for his guests, and Ardy is playing loud music, which is stressing Dev out.
Yeah, but when Stella and Carl come down, come round, the twins come downstairs, and they made this lovely little scrapbook about Sunita's life with Dev, probably full of press photos of Show Me Pilates.
Yeah, cut out of Soap Weekly.
And Asha says, oh, it's wrong what people are saying about Mum, she wouldn't want to kill anybody. And that kind of gets Dev thinking, yeah, maybe I accepted what the police said a bit too quickly.
So Carl says, look, maybe you should just go along with what the twins think and think the best of Sunita, implying that she did actually do everything the police said, but that Dev should just put that memory to one side.
Yeah, well, it seems like it's not over, because obviously Carl's got to have his comeuppance at some point, so it seems maybe that Dev's going to get his Sherlock Holmes hat on now and start doing a bit of poking around and investigating.
Yeah, and who better to help him
Than Mary?
Now this could be quite good. This could be a storyline I get quite excited about, as I love Mary.
Finally this week we've got our Worldwide Webster storyline. No, it started off on Monday with some amazing scenes in the Rovers with a drunk Sally.
Beth tells Sally there's nothing sadder than drinking on your own, and leaves her on her own drinking in the Rovers.
And Norris is whittering on in Sally's ear, and she calls him a nasty little bald elf, which was perfect put down. And I think lots of people like that. That was all over Twitter about her calling him that. And then better, Steve comes over and offers a bit of support, and she says, "You're a nice little bald elf."
Aww.
Which is perfect, because he has got a very, very bald head at the moment, Steve, hasn't he? We haven't mentioned it on the podcast yet. But
he's done, every so often, I think it must be lambing season or was it sheep shearing season, and he must get caught up in a bunch of them and just shorn at his local
looks
farm.
He looks awful at the moment. So, on Wednesday, Tuesday, there wasn't one on Wednesday, was it? Tuesday, Sally's caught on the laptop,
internet.
And she closes her laptop down, so who knows what she's looking at.
She says she's looking
for holidays.
Yeah, she doesn't want them to see, and so Sophie decides to grab the laptop and have a look in plain sight. Don't do that. It could be anything. It could be like some particular kind of special site that Sally wants to look at that caters to particular tastes.
Yeah.
Involving conservatories.
No, I think it involves like mechanic fetishes.
Oh my goodness.
Like, oh, Miss Kevin in Germany.
So she confesses she's not looking at pornography involving mechanics
and conservatories.
She's looking at a dating site, which is just as bad.
So, new storyline for Sally. Hooray.
It's also a bit of a storyline for Jenna, who seems to take every opportunity available to put her foot in it.
Yeah.
By insulting her and saying her clothes are terrible and so on and so forth.
Yeah. So they make this profile for Sally, saying that she's in her early 40s and she's looking for someone for friendship and maybe more.
Sally thinks that sounds a bit tarty.
Yeah, and these clothes that she bought today didn't really help either, did it? She's got all these... She's saying that my clothes are all a bit too beige, and I want to look like sexy and mysterious. So they go and buy all this kind of kinky clothes. That was that for that storyline, really, wasn't it?
So, yeah, she decided that in order to entice Mark, she was going to take her daughter and her lesbian lover to go and pick out some slutty clothes. Just to pretend that she's in her early 40s.
Yeah, so I'm glad that she's getting a storyline, because, like, she was having one with Gail earlier on in the year.
Yeah, she was Gail's little friend, which wasn't really a very good storyline.
She needs her own storyline. It's just unfortunate for her that she's got boring Sophie and Jenna that are tagging along with it. So hopefully Mark's going to be a shining personality, because she does need her own storyline.
Well, it's either going to turn out to be a kind of decent bloke, or it's going to be one of those throwaway sort of like one episode
comedy storylines.
Cameo things.
Yeah, like Peter Kay.
Who was that person who had a terrible date? It was an older lady, and he was a horrible bore in the bistro.
Who was that?
I don't remember.
It wasn't Gloria or anything, was it? I don't even remember when it was.
Well, somebody had a terrible date.
Somebody had a terrible date. We can't remember. It wasn't very long ago. But it could be like that. But I hope not. Because Sally is so in desperate need of a storyline. And if they're not going to set her up like with a business or anything, which is what really should happen, then at least this is something.
Let's think of it in practical terms that Kevin is obviously not around because the actor is in court. And whether he is found, if he's found guilty, he's never going to be in it again. If he's found innocent, they're probably going to try and write him back in again to do the decent thing. So having an internet dating storyline is actually quite a good idea because they can take it anywhere.
Yeah, it can either develop into something.
They could get in like another character, like a new, brand new character that can stay in it for a long time.
Yeah.
But they might just decide to just have it as a temporary thing either way, just to give her something to do until they find out what's actually happening with Kevin.
Yeah, I guess so. So,
Deirdre needs to go internet dating too now.
She does. So that is that. That is our extremely long street talk. We're not going to have a character profile, and we do apologise for the people that like those. That's 2 weeks in a row we've not had a character profile, but we'll be back resuming normal service next week. So we'll come back in a second with some news. The Cabin. It's the news time for the podcast. Sad, sad news for the first one. We all know that the old Corrie set is not going to be used for very much longer because they're building this new one just down the road. And lots of fans had hoped that they'd be able to keep it open for a bit, like have the Granada Studio tours back again, or like as a mecca for Corrie fans. But it seems, according to the Sunday People, that they're going to be turning it into IKEA's European headquarters.
That's just terrible. I mean, on the one hand, it's brilliant that IKEA's like European headquarters are going to be based in the UK.
Because... I don't care about
no,
that.
No, listen, yeah, but all we ever hear about is how companies get relocated to other countries because nobody wants to stay in the UK. That's why your dad lost his job.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, it's good that a company actually wants to base its European headquarters in the UK. On the other hand, why'd they have to do it right on top of Coronation Street?
I'm really surprised that nobody else
cares
wanted
about it.
To. Yeah, nobody cares enough because...
I tell you what,
it's a national.
If this was
Canada,
they wouldn't allow this, would they?
They would not.
They wouldn't. They'd have it preserved and made into some kind of museum.
That would be awesome. They so should. I even if they'd like keep it open for a little bit.
I really don't understand why they don't. Like, keep it open for a month, sell the tickets, £30 a head. They could make a killing on that. I can only assume they've got a
really,
really good reason.
We're just gonna have to make our pilgrimages to IKEA and have some meatballs.
Just break it.
So, second bit of news. There's some new Corrie-ish merchandise available. The complete Betty Driver album, 1935 to 1955, will be going on sale on June the 30th on iTunes, Amazon, eMusic and Spotify. Now, after Betty sadly passed away, we got to see like documentaries and things about her on ITV1. And they were showing her some of her musical past. And it was really funny to watch because we'd only ever seen Betty as this sort of old ladies in her 80s and 90s,
yeah.
And then to see her sort of young and on the stage, it's like you couldn't believe it was the same person. And now you can buy this CD that's got 37 tracks on to see what Betty was like in the days before Coronation Street. And you can go on onto her website and have a listen to some clips from some of them, and well, they sound like you might imagine for 1930s, 1940s music.
Now, this
not
could
particularly
be quite
to my taste,
good because,
but...
like, retro kind of 1950s, 1940s, like, music and culture is kind of having a resurgence, isn't it?
Is it?
Your sister has just got a job working for a 1950s band, Michael.
Yeah, but I don't think she sings songs like this.
I think she probably might do.
You didn't hear the clips, did you? They're very kind of, they're the kind of clips that you see, that you hear on the background on
kind
like compilation
like
shots of World War
Two. Of Dover and stuff. Do you mean?
No, a little bit more. A bit more George Foreman. Well, it features.
That's what George Foreman.
No, George Formby. I mean, not George Foreman. George Foreman.
Cheese.
Well, it features such classics as The Little Woolly Vest.
I love that song.
The Alpine Milkman. Oh. The Bullfrog Samba.
Oh, cool.
And We Mustn't Miss the Last Bus Home. That's the one. So if you're a fan of any of those songs,
yes,
you can buy make the complete Betty Driver on the 30th of June. Moving on.
Oh.
According to the People, we've got Helen Flanagan news again.
Helen Flanagan news alert. Boop, 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 boop.
I don't know how long we can keep going, still saying this is Coronation Street news, but anyway, the news this week is that she's apparently landed herself a £500,000 deal to do an ITV reality show, which is perfect.
ITV2 reality show.
Yeah, I can't believe it hasn't happened before. So she's going to be like the new Katie Price or
Jay Gooding.
Well, she says she is, according to the source, because I don't think it's been officially confirmed yet, she's excited. She can't believe she's being offered her own show. She's perfect for ITV2. Her life's a car crash and the British public love to watch it. Would you watch it?
That's horrible. They actually said that.
That's what the source says.
Oh, it's not like I thought that was a PR person. Her life's a car crash. I'm gonna work with her. You think you've got it bad.
I would quite like to watch an episode or two.
Oh, I would.
But I'd get a bit.
Hi, it's me, Helen Flanagan, and this is my life. You might know me as Rosie Webster, but I'm actually far more glamorous. I'm best known for stealing things from Boots.
Yeah, because that's the second part of our Helen Flanagan news. She's been banned from Boots for 5 years because apparently she walked out and she didn't realise she was holding this £200 worth of cosmetics.
How strict is this 5-year ban? Is there like a photo of Helen Flanagan in like every Boots in the country with like a countdown clock?
Yeah, like
you can come in now.
Well, Helen Flanagan is outraged that she was banned from Boots for 5 years. She says, I was feeling hot and flustered. I walked out of the shop. I had enough. Security said, excuse me. I looked down and there's about £200 worth in my basket. I said, oh God, I'm so sorry. I wouldn't do this kind of thing.
No, she said, I would not do this kind of thing.
She was about to call the police and then she said, I'll be kind. I'll ban you from Boots for 5 years. I did use the F word. It was really annoying.
Oh, flip!
You can't have the power to ban someone from Boots. I shop there all the time.
Again. You don't have the power to ban me from Boots for 5 years.
I'm Helen Flanagan.
Everyone needs to be able to get to Boots. Where am I supposed to buy lip gloss?
Why does her accent not sound anything like her?
It's funnier.
This is like Bo Selector. If Abed Moon was doing Helen Flanagan, he would make her sound like this. So, if anyone is in Boots and they see Helen Flanagan there,
she should be out.
You tell the person behind the counter that she shouldn't be shopping there. I know she shops there all the time.
Everyone shops at Boots all the time, and just imagine how easy it is to be banned inadvertently. I mean, it could have happened to anybody.
I think there's going to be an episode of a reality show, it will be a drama, where it's like, Helen tries to get in some Boots.
I'm surprised she didn't say, you've just lost yourself £200 worth of business.
Anyway.
We love you, Helen.
We love Helen Flanagan. She's awesome. She's my favourite ex-Corrie star. Good news for Jack P. Shepherd. He's going to be a dad again with his fiancée, Lauren.
Aww.
No more news than that, but well done, Jack. Get married now because you've been engaged for about two years. Oh yeah, we were engaged for a lot longer than that. But yes, congratulations. Super duper.
Well done, Jack. Then, isn't
it? And also,
wunderbar.
In definitely good news, Liz Dawn is okay because she had that heart attack last month. But she's all right now and she's back from hospital and she is was interviewed by the Manchester Evening News or something and she says she's all right, which is good. And also she enjoyed the Soap Awards.
Well, who didn't? We had
EastEnders
jolly good
fans
time.
Didn't enjoy the Soap Awards this year.
Anyone who liked Ian Beale did, though.
Oh, yeah. So that is it for news, apart from a bit of cast spoiler news, which we're going to talk about at the very end of the show.
This is my idea, because I cannot seem to stop him from digging these things up and deciding to talk about them. So I've decided that what we should do is put them at the very end of the show. So if you don't want to listen to spoilers, you can just turn it off when we get to that.
But it's not going to be regular, but this is quite a big one. So we'll come back to that later. Let's go on and do a bit of feedback now. Okay, so our first email this week was from Steve. And he says, hi guys, real Steve McDonald here again. A quick pronunciation point. Newfoundland is pronounced Newfoundland. They are the Welsh of Canada in that no one can understand their accent.
And everybody hates them.
Although it's heavily influenced by the Irish, apparently, and they are the brunt of many jokes. Newfoundland is actually a half time zone different from the neighbouring provinces.
What?
When it's 3 o'clock in Toronto, it's 4 o'clock in Halifax.
Halifax.
And 4:30 in Newfoundland.
Newfoundland.
That sounds so complicated. Your countries are too wide.
I mean...
Be a narrow country like us and only have one time zone.
It boggles our mind because are we not, like, most of Europe is on the same time zone?
It's, well, no, is that true?
Well, yeah, because, like, France is, like, an hour ahead.
No, but Germany is now behind.
So France is an hour ahead and Germany is an hour
so.
Behind?
Oh, I don't know. But anyway, just
be
a little country like us.
We don't agree with you. We don't make up our own time. That's German.
That is
we do all accents. We do Helen Flanagan. We do German, and we do Canadian. Newfoundland.
Anyway, that was nothing to do with Coronation Street. But Steve goes on to say, for falling in and out of love, which was a little discussion point we had a few weeks ago, something that we quite often see is short-term characters are introduced and are way over the top, and then when they return, they're calmer and reasonable. Mm-hmm. Yeah, an example of this, I hated Becky and Kylie when they first were brought in on the show because of how really bad they were written into their initial storylines. However, in both cases, both characters went on to be my favourites. Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, Kylie, she came in being a right nasty piece of work, didn't she?
She was basically selling children.
Yeah. And
at
the time,
which is what Tina did, but somehow everyone likes her.
At the time, I was like, I hope they don't make us like Kylie, because I don't want to like Kylie, because she's really a nasty piece of work. And I kind of like Kylie now, but I don't like her half as much as I like Becky.
I don't love her.
Yeah. As for falling out with love with, prior to the tram crash, Steve says, I was a big fan of Leanne. She was a firecracker of a character, but now she's just a nagging old mother / wife that the street is full of.
She's a fishwife.
Yeah, don't like Leanne. We totally agree with you on that one, Steve. And Tivor is back from her holiday, sent us an email saying, hi guys, hope you had a good weekend in London.
No, it was awful. Thanks for asking.
We were working.
I was ill. It wasn't a trip.
We were working and Gemma was ill.
I was ill, sorry. But thank you for your good wishes.
Yes. Here's a few comments from the podcast this week. Simple kisses and near kisses are a short, making an awful lot of trouble on the street. Katie kissed Ryan once and it all came apart. And Gary hasn't even touched lips with Tina and things are crumbling around him. Yes, lots of overreactions.
No, I don't know.
I don't care about Katie and Chesney and Ryan. I hate anything to do with them these days. The situation with Gary, Tina and Izzy is the powder keg, even though it's one drunken mistake. More and more people know the secret, so it's going to come out sooner or later. Yes, it did. Maybe Izzy will be mature after a period of strop and take Gary back, and Tommy and Tina will get back together. Are you sure you've not been looking at the TV guides, Diane? Because that's pretty much what's happened, Izzy being mature. She's still in her stroppy stage.
I think Diane writes this.
I wonder if Tina will end up keeping the baby if Gary and Izzy are at odds. Some people have speculated that the baby is really Tommy's, but I don't think that will happen.
That would be weird.
The clinics do pregnancy tests before implantation, and they'd have come positive if she'd already been pregnant. I don't think they need to worry about that.
Also, do you not think that they would have said to her, can you please refrain from having sex when we're trying to implant you with this embryo? Just so that we can be totally sure what we're sticking in it.
I think that if they want to make it Tommy's baby, they're not going to bother about making it completely accurate with these tests and everything.
Oh, yeah, true, yeah.
And then she finishes off saying, by the time of the fertile week of the implantation, Tina and Tommy were broken up.
I hope the writers remember that.
Mm. Oh, no, there's one other bit. While I mildly enjoy seeing Rob and Peter butting heads, I'm rapidly losing the will to live with Rob and Tracy, and I suspect Carla is too. Nice to know that Peter can see through Tracy like a window.
Yes.
Glad to know someone can, because no one else has the ability.
Peter's like Cassandra, like predicting the future, but nobody will listen, watching the whole thing falling down and burning rubble and going insane with the knowledge that he knew all along, but nobody would listen to him.
Mm. Yeah, well, we agree with those emails this week, so... I also put on Facebook today, what have you thought of this big week in Coronation Street? And we didn't get any replies, so I think that speaks volumes to what people thought of it.
I'm not really slating it, but it's not an event. Nothing happened out of the ordinary. It was a really good episode, but...
Last year...
compared to a normal week, it was good.
Yeah, but it wasn't big event TV, no. I don't think. Last year, it was, I think it was at the time when, I think it was Tina and Tommy and that lot were in it again. It was when all that Terry Duckworth and Drug Money and everything was involved. Mm, and it ended with Leslie cheese on toasting herself to death.
Cheesing herself to death.
Which is a really good way to end the week. I enjoyed that. As much as I loved Leslie. And then the year before that, it was the factory siege, yeah. So it didn't live up to it.
So this week was the week that we had the Britain's Got Talent finals, which was shown before Coronation Street was on. So they really, I can't believe that they planned, I keep saying this, I can't believe that this was their plan to keep viewers hooked.
I think they just
hooked.
Think that people really love the surrogacy storyline. They should have had something big happen with Roy or something if they wanted to keep the viewers hooked.
What's the demographic of people that watch Britain's Got Talent?
People who fancy Tommy and Tina, I think.
To say something rude here, but as we know, both our mothers watch it. We can't say anything too bad. But
I watched it tonight.
People that, yeah, I don't know. I mean, this is a bit stereotypical, but I always imagine that the birth storylines are the ones that older people like. You know, like, that's why they have it at Christmas, because they want to have the family, and the kids are watching it for all the, you know, the shenanigans and the people kissing each other, and the grannies are watching it going, oh, isn't it lovely? Oh, it's a nice little baby. Oh, how sweet. That's what my nan sounds like, in case you wondered. She is a Cockney. So that's why maybe old people watch Britain's Got Talent.
I don't know.
And they wanted to see a nice little baby.
Maybe.
I don't know what's the thinking behind this, but I think they blew it.
That's it for our feedback. Now, we are going to have our little cabin spoilers at the end, so we'll just give out our contact addresses now, so you can email us, should you wish, at conversationstreet@gmail.com, either text or voice message. You can leave a comment on our blog at conversationstreet.podbean.com. You can follow us on Twitter at conversationstreet, or search for us on Facebook. Just search in for Conversation
Just
Street.
Just write Conversation Street.
And you shall find us. So if you're not going to stay for these little casting spoilers,
it's not interesting. I wish I didn't have to.
It is interesting.
I don't like spoilers.
It's not a spoiler. Well, look, let's get started with it. We're going to start it now.
Bye.
So, Liz McDonald coming back to the street. What do you think about that?
I don't think you left long enough of a gap.
I did. I'm awesome at editing.
Liz McDonald is returning to Coronation Street.
Uh-huh. Good. That's good. Well, when was it she left? About 2 years ago. It was early in 2011, I think. The street needs her back.
Well, the actress left because she was suffering from depression.
Yeah, and she's all better now.
Hopefully, yes, she has recovered. She believes that she's made a recovery, so I hope that is definitely the case. Because I would not like to see the same thing happen to her that happened to Julie Goodyear. When she came back and she just couldn't seem to...
Yeah, that's true, actually.
But in Julie Goodyear's defence, she had had a long break from being in Coronation Street, and the entire culture of the show and the way that it was filmed and everything was completely different. But Beverly hasn't had such a big gap.
No, I think she'll be fine.
She's not going to be stepping into something that's radically different. Yeah. And hopefully they might have learned a few lessons from what they did with the return of Bert Lynch character, and they won't just chuck her into the deep end and make a big fuss about her coming back.
Mm. Well,
actors are people too.
It'll be odd having her back, because when she left before, they did make it a thing of she's leaving and she's going for good, because they had like all the echoes of past quotes, and then she was like walking down the street kind of... as if I'm properly going now, so it is going to be weird seeing her again. But apparently she's...
After such a relatively short amount of time, too.
Yeah, but, I think everyone's begging for her to drag Stella out of the Rovers and replace her as rightful landlady of the pub.
Well, in other spoiler news, we do know that the family of Stella and co. have been signed on for another couple of years or something.
Something like that, apparently.
And we've also heard threats that they want to make them the main focus of the street, sort of like the linchpin family around which Coronation Street has been formed. So
plans
I
can
do
change, though.
Completely wonder where she's going to fit in.
Who, Liz?
Where is Liz going to fit in this?
Maybe she'll, take over the bistro or something.
She's going to... I mean, I cannot... Can you imagine Liz... on the street, not behind the bar.
No, I don't know what she would
do. I just kind of assume she's going to go back to working in the pub.
Yeah.
But she was so proud of seeing her name above the door, and now she's going to be...
She couldn't work under Stella.
She's going to have to, otherwise there's nowhere for her to go. She can't... What? I mean, she doesn't have... What? Who does she know that's on the street? Who's her family?
Well, Steve. And she's busy mates with Deirdre, isn't she?
But she can't live with either of those characters, though. She used to live in the pub, didn't she?
Yeah, but she did lodge with Deirdre and Ken for a bit with Blanche.
Well, there's plenty of room now. Ken and Blanche are gone.
Yeah, well, it could be good to get Deirdre having some proper storylines.
It could be kind of cool, because they did try to make Sally and...
Gail
have their little let's be buddies kind of female friendship sort of thing. They could make that into more of a thing between Deirdre and... Liz, I mean, we know they both really enjoy gossiping and smoking together, so perhaps they can do that.
Yeah, maybe. So I think we better tie it up there. So yeah, good news. And I can't wait to have her back on screen.
When's she going to come back?
I think it's like October or something.
Happy birthday to me.
Yeah, so we've still got a bit of a way to go. But hey, that is definitely it for this week. We'll be back with a proper normal episode, character profile and all next week.
It's all completely normal. It might be a bit different, but it'll still be normal.
Well, that's
true.
That is true, it will be.
Goodbye.
The music for this episode was provided by podcastthemes.com.